You are listening to True Crime Twins, a true crime podcast hosted by Chloe and Melina Cantor. True Crime Twins is produced by Crawlspace Media.
Welcome back to True Crime Twins. We are your hosts, Chloe and Melina Cantor. Thank you for listening. If you're new here, we are twins covering unsolved disappearances and murders from a criminological, psychological, and medical lens. Chloe is a master's student in criminology, and Melina is a registered nurse.
This is part three of our coverage of the disappearance of Sophia McKenna. Sophia was 21 years old on May 27, 2018, when she and her friend Spencer Mugford set sail on Long Island Sound in the middle of the night. Sophia was photographed standing on land at Ledge Lighthouse at 2 a.m. smiling. 5 minutes later, Sophia placed 8 frantic phone calls in a row to her mother. She left no text or voicemail messages. 9 days later, Spencer Mugford's body was found in the sea, 3 miles from Ledge Light. 2 other missing boaters unrelated to the case were found during the search. Sophia remains missing 3 years later. For more information about this case, please listen to part one, where we discuss case background, and part two, where we hear about Sophia's story from her mother's perspective.
In today's third part, we will discuss what we've learned so far. We will also read from some primary sources in this case. First, we'd like to address a few loose ends from previous episodes. In episode one, we stated that we weren't sure what boat was used. The Coast Guard wasn't either. They initially believed Sophia and Spencer were in a kayak. Then they believed it was a paddle boat. In the early days of the search, Sophia's mother was shown a photograph by Spencer Mugford's father. It was of a white boat with red text, Mugford. At the time, Spencer's father believed they were traveling in this boat. Charles Mugford reportedly stated later that it was indeed a boat from Yukon Avery Point, where Spencer had once attended. We were also not sure if authorities had confirmed the vessel they believed was used. We have since come across an Eyewitness News article reporting confirmation that the Coast Guard believed it was a 14-foot sailboat from Yukon without a mast. They didn't specify how they came to this conclusion. Sophia's mother later told us that it was Austin Perro and his father who first spotted the boat the day after, May 28th, flying above in their private plane. The Coast Guard later recovered the boat after a 71-hour search. It was partially buried in the sand.
We also stated in episode one that there were reports of Spencer's shirt being found at Ledge Light, tied to a cleat. This was interpreted by some as a cleat sneaker, but it was actually tied to the cleat of the lighthouse, which is a T-shaped piece of material to which ropes are attached.
In episode two, we asked Sophia's mother if she knew how Spencer died. This could bear significance in what may have happened to Sophia. She was never made aware of the cause or manner of death of Spencer Mugford, who was found 9 days after their disappearance. All she knew was that the Mugfords had hired a licensed private investigator to investigate his death because he actually had interviewed her for his investigation. She was never made aware of the outcome of the investigation or what sparked it in the first place. The Mugfords declined to provide these details to producers of this show. A significant element to this case is the app Snapchat, which for those who don't know, is a social media app where people post pictures and videos and captions that can be posted to your story, which means that everyone that follows you can see it, or you can send it to individuals. This is significant in this case because Spencer's Snapchat account was active not 5 minutes before frantic calls were placed to Sophia's mother. The last photo posted was a picture of Sophia smiling on land at Ledge Light. When Snapchat was founded in 2011, you could only take pictures live on the app. In June 2016, the app updated and added a feature called Memories, where older footage could be uploaded. So in 2018, Spencer and Sophia could upload older footage or post live. Therefore, that last photo of Sophia posted at 2 a.m. may have been taken at 2 a.m. or it may have been taken earlier. Sophia definitely had a habit of calling her mother if she was in trouble. Michelle had stated that she was the first one that Sophia would call, that Sophia felt comfortable coming to her for certain things if there was any kind of crisis, including when she and Spencer got pulled over. Michelle was the one to call. So that kind of solidifies the theory that many people have that Sophia was calling her mother because she was in trouble, and that this is something that Sophia had done based on past behavior. This case hasn't gotten the coverage that it deserves, not even close. So we're trying to be thorough. We've requested a series of documents through the Freedom of Information Act. But until then, we're going to share information gleaned from primary sources that we have access to at this point. The following is a supplemental narrative written by Detective Daniel J. Grimm from the City of Groton Police Department. It's describing an interaction between officers and Sophia's boyfriend, Austin Perrow. Many of the names in this record, besides Spencer Mugford's, are redacted. But through context and previous interviews, it was pretty easy to connect the dots and fill in the blanks. After documenting the scene, Officer Duelos and I went back to the station and contacted Austin Perrow, who is Sophia's boyfriend. Perrow agreed to meet me at the station and talk about Sophia. At approximately 19:20 hours on May 28th, 2018, Austin arrived at the City of Groton Police Department to speak with Officer Duelos and I. I explained to Austin that he was free to leave at any time, and at any time during the interview, if he felt like he wanted to leave, then the interview would be over and he would be free to leave. Austin said he understood and still wanted to talk to investigators. Austin said on Saturday, May 26th, 2018, Sophia picked him up at the massage therapy school located across from her apartment building on Fort Hill Road. Austin said he was arrested earlier that month by the town of Groton and he was not allowed at Sophia's apartment, but he was allowed to have contact with her. I checked the collect system and it showed that Austin is not to be at Sophia's apartment, but could be with her. Austin said they went to Ocean Beach in New London for the day, and around 2:30 p.m., Sophia dropped him off at his car. Austin said he then went to Renegade Gym in Groton. Austin said he texted one of his friends who he works out with at 3:06 p.m., stating he was at the gym. Austin showed me the text message. Austin said that he and Sophia planned on going to Foxwood Outlets the next day, Sunday, May 27th, 2018. Austin said he sent Sophia a text message at 1:02 p.m., on Sunday, asking her if she was still in bed. Austin said he told her in a message that if she was still in bed, that she seriously had issues. Austin said the last message he received from Sophia was the night before on Saturday at 10:49 p.m. The message Sophia sent said, "I wish I was cuddling with you." Austin said he could tell from the message that she was not intoxicated at the time she sent the message. I asked Austin if Sophia drinks, and he said that she has a drinking problem. Austin told me that Sophia drinks to the point of blacking out and can get violent when she drinks. Austin said he sent Sophia a couple of text messages on Sunday afternoon, and that the last message that went through was at 2:31 p.m. Austin said he sent a few more text messages after not receiving any response. Austin said that at 3:40 p.m. he sent another text message, and that one did not go through, meaning that Sophia's cell phone had been turned off or the battery had died. Austin said he had texted Sophia's mother at 3:21 p.m. Austin said Michelle texted him back at 3:26 p.m., saying she had not heard from Sophia. I asked Austin if he knew Spencer Mugford, and he said that he had seen Mugford at the gym a few times, and he knew that he had worked with Sophia. Austin said Mugford, as far as he knew, was harmless, and he was just friends with Sophia. Sophia's mother told Austin one time Mugford was acting strange and creepy, not wanting to leave when Sophia told him that she wanted to take a nap. Mugford was asked to leave, and he did, but then came back claiming to have forgotten his car keys. Michelle told Austin she thought that was creepy. Austin said he knew that Mugford was an avid fisherman, because all of his Instagram photos show him holding fish or him out fishing. Austin said Michelle told him she saw a picture on Mugford's Snapchat page and it was of Sophia standing near a wall that said no trespassing. Michelle told Austin Sophia looked intoxicated in the photo,
The photo Austin is referring to is Sophia at the Ledge Light Lighthouse. That is where Mugford's shirt was found tied to the cleat of the lighthouse. Mugford's shirt was taken and placed into evidence. Austin said he tried contacting Mugford after not hearing from Sophia and that there was no response from Mugford. Austin said he then contacted Mugford's brother and asked if he had heard from Mugford. Austin said the brother responded to him saying that he was, quote, MIA. Austin then contacted Mugford's mother. Austin said he sent a message first asking if she was Mugford's mother. The mother told Austin she had contacted the police and they told her to post asking if anyone has seen Mugford on Facebook. Austin told the mother that Sophia's mother, Michelle, had received 7 missed phone calls from Mugford's phone on Sunday morning between 2 and 2:09 a.m. Austin, throughout the whole interview, was cooperative and showed all text messages from his phone. Austin said when leaving, if our agency needed anything else from him, to call, and he had no problem talking to us. On Friday, June 8th, 2018, Spencer's body was recovered by the Coast Guard. Detective Holliday and Youth Officer Lesage should document the recovery. See Detective Holliday's report. On Tuesday, June 19th, 2018, a friend of Austin Perro's came down to the City of Groton Police Department to speak with Detective Holliday and me about new information that was obtained during the course of this department interview. It was learned that he was at a party the night Spencer and Sophia went missing. Austin said that he and his brother, Dalton Perro, were supposed to go to a party that night. They both decided they did not want to go because they were tired. Detective Holliday called and spoke to Austin and confirmed the story. At this time, McKenna is still missing.
So this is actually the first time Melina's hearing this report, and I'm very interested to know your initial reactions.
I think that it made me kind of see him in a different light. I feel like he definitely probably omitted certain unpleasantry, should I say, like what Michelle described him, you know, chastising her, like saying like, shut the fuck up. Like when he called looking for her, like he didn't mention any of like the nastiness that was involved. Well, you know what? Maybe he did, because he said that when he texted Sophia, when she didn't show at the outlets, is that if you're still sleeping right now, that's pretty messed up. So even with all the politeness and being so, cooperative with the police, it's still kind of shown through.
You definitely get the tone from this report that they at least had the perception that Austin was being cooperative. They made a point to mention that he offered to help in any way that he could as he was leaving, and he had voluntarily handed over his cell phone for them to confirm the times of the text messages that he had described. My first thought was, and I'm not saying that he did this, but it's very possible that you could easily delete messages that provide certain context to the situation unless they did a forensic analysis of his phone, which this report does not indicate. And according to Sophia's aunt, his phone records or his phone were never forensically analyzed, that they kind of took this at face value, which is unfortunate because everything should be looked at thoroughly and they shouldn't just take someone's word for it, especially with the circumstances of their relationship at the time. I mean, he had voluntarily told them that he wasn't allowed at Sophia's apartment because of an arrest. And we know details of this arrest. We know that he threatened to kick the door down. We know that he called her a fat slut. We know that he threatened to slit her fucking throat. He said obscene, disturbing things. He was physically imposing and threatening. He was verbally threatening. Sophia told the police that she was in fear of her life. It's very concerning to me that a forensic analysis was not done on this phone.
Flags went up in my head when they asked about Spencer and if they knew him. I think that he completely downplayed any of that because I'm seeing this tumultuous, it's mutually tumultuous, jealousy, infidelity, constant fighting, physical fighting, horribleness in this relationship between Austin and Sophia. And you're expecting me to believe that he really doesn't know that much about Spencer, like a guy that's spending time with his girlfriend. Like he's acting like he's not a threat, but I have a seriously hard time believing that, especially because he said that, oh, I think he works here and I think that he does this. But then he's saying that all his photos on Instagram are with fish and stuff and like him fishing. So it's like, why are you, he's on his Instagram. It's like, really? I feel like he was minimizing it.
I mean, I lurk on people's Instagrams all the time. I didn't think it was that weird that he had gone through Spencer's Instagram, especially if it was someone that was spending time with Sophia. But I do agree that efforts were made to minimize exactly how much he knew about Spencer, exactly how concerned he was about their friendship. It should be noted that Michelle, Sophia's mom, was not under the impression that Austin was threatened by the relationship. But she did also say that when Sophia and Spencer had gotten matching tattoos together, that Sophia was concerned about Austin's reaction finding out. So that makes me think that maybe it was a point of contention at one point, especially if jealousy had been an issue. She had said too, you know, that maybe Austin thought that he wasn't Sophia's type or that maybe he wasn't interested in Sophia. We know that's not the case because Michelle thought that Sophia might have kissed him once when they were drunk. Other reports say that they had a brief relationship. We don't know exactly what the timeline is on that, but it's not like Austin had zero to worry about there. There was a past between the two of them. They were very close. And there were instances in the past where Sophia didn't really want Austin to know exactly how close they were and how much time they were spending together. And if it was something that upset Austin, it's understandable that he would want to downplay that to the police. He also made a point to tell a story about Spencer being creepy. Michelle, I can of course ask her if she recalls that incident where he didn't seem to want to leave, but Michelle really only had very kind things to say about Spencer and said that he was a very good friend to Sophia and that she was so glad that Sophia found a genuine male friend.
I think that's something important to remember is that maybe he didn't seem threatened by Spencer. Like if he felt the need to explain to Sophia's mother that, oh, he's not her type. He's not this. He's not that. He can say that all he wants because he wants to maintain this, you know, illusion or image of being self-assured, masculine man. But imagine what's going on behind the scenes. I once had a boyfriend that was jealous when I was like hanging out with men that were not attracted to women. And I think that when it comes to being possessive and territorial and narcissistic, you're jealous of basically anything. You're jealous of their family.
I was hoping that you would mention that because jealousy is inherently irrational in most situations. Obviously, there are times where people give you good reason to be jealous. We heard stories of Austin going through Sophia's phone when she was sleeping. That goes beyond the point of what is rational and what is provoked. That is a complete violation of privacy. It's possessive. It's childish. It's abusive. And he's going through her phone. He's already showing signs of kind of a lack of trust. And we know that this was a point of contention. And like Melina said, people like that, they will find anything to be jealous of. I dated someone that didn't want me to go out with girlfriends because he thought that going out with women, just women, meant that we had to be out trolling for men and that there was nothing innocent about it. And like you said, you would hang out with men that are gay, that literally have no interest in women at all, not just you, women at all. And that was still a problem. So I don't think that these explanations are convincing me very much. Anything else that you noticed with those reports?
I guess I am unfortunately not surprised. Like basically what we were saying before was that the police really just took his word.
It did seem that way. However, a week or so later, they did call someone else in to confirm whether or not Austin had gone to the party. I'm pretty sure Austin had said that he didn't end up going to the party, but they just wanted to confirm from the friend that he was discussing the party with, and I think even the people that were hosting the party, that Austin and his brother did indeed not go to that party. So it seemed that they were trying to establish some kind of alibi, but couldn't.
And now, a quick word from our sponsors. Thanks for listening to our sponsors. Now back to the show.
In episode one, we read a few social media posts that were posted by Austin Perro in the days after Sophia went missing. We were concerned about a post that was made on May 28th, just a day after Sophia was known to be missing, where he said that he will miss her, talking as if she's gone forever and he'll never see her again. We know from what Michelle told us that Austin and his dad had observed the white boat from the sky flying in their private jet before the Coast Guard had uncovered it. He had noted that to her, that they had seen something, but it wasn't confirmed until the Coast Guard had actually, you know, gone over to Truman Beach and saw the boat, which was upside down and partially buried in the sand. So maybe spotting that boat kind of solidified in his head that this was a recovery mission and no longer a rescue mission, but they couldn't really be sure just from looking so high above that that boat was connected to the case. They didn't even know at that point what boat they had taken out. They'd figured out later on that it was from the Avery Point campus, and I think they had made that connection because Sophia's car was parked at the campus, and then the boat was missing, and they made that connection. Another post that we found since was one on Instagram. It's a screenshot, and it's not showing the date, but it's interesting nonetheless. It reads, "You are the best thing that ever came into my life. August 17th, 2014 was our first date. You picked my skinny ass up from my house at around 9 p.m. and we drove to the beach and sat in the sand. We talked for almost 3 hours before you brought me home. Before I got out of the car, we kissed for the first time. I remember thinking, I can't believe I just kissed Sophia McKenna. The next day, I snuck you into the basement of my house when everyone was asleep. Earlier that day, I got my braces on, so I remember I was talking with a lisp. I was new then, too, to the whole, quote, girl thing. So I just came right out and was like, will you be my girlfriend? Next thing you know, it's almost 4 years later, and you're still my girl. There would be times where we would fight, and we wouldn't see each other for days, but we would always end up coming back because we couldn't stay away from each other. There's nothing that I love more in life than you. And last week on my birthday, you said in the card, love is forever. And you are so right. I'm so happy that on Saturday, we spent the entire day together on Ocean Beach. We forgot food, so the lady sitting next to us made us each a hot dog. Good thing, because I know you get hangry. I honestly don't know how I'm going to do this without you. You truly were the better side of me, and I'm so sorry I wasn't there to save you. Every night before we would fall asleep, you would say to me, see you in my dreams. And we would go to bed. I love you, Sophia. I'll see you in my dreams. Without context, it seems emotional, heartfelt, loving. You know, the last part, it's, you know, I'll see you in my dreams. It's very sad. Based on what he said about his birthday being last week, we know that Austin's birthday is 5 days prior to the day of her disappearance. So it was soon after the disappearance that this was posted, based on that kind of time frame. So in the first half of that post, he's speaking about her in the present. In the second half, it's past. I don't know how I'm going to do this without you. I'm so sorry I wasn't there to save you.
I noticed something different. And it's interesting, my choice of words there. I said something, thing, not one. He said, you are the best thing that ever came into my life. Best thing. And then he said, there's nothing that I love more in life than you. Not, there's not anyone. There's nothing. It's two times that he referred to her as a thing and not as a one.
Definitely interesting to observe. And it aligns with things that he's written in the past that we've kind of interpreted as being very possessive, treating her as more as an extension of his ego than an actual person. And we should also just make a disclaimer, being a possessive and controlling person doesn't make you guilty of anything inherently, but it does indicate that there was perhaps some coercive control in that relationship. For those who don't know, coercive control is a form of domestic violence, but it's in more of the emotional realm where the abuser does things to sort of make it so you feel like you can't leave, such as exhibiting excessive jealousy, possessiveness, isolating you from your friends and your family, making threats of harming you or harming yourself. We know that Austin has done several of those things. And we also know that Austin physically harmed Sophia. We know that he broke her nose from her mother. We saw pictures of a gash on her forehead, a dark, dark bruise on the sole of her foot. And that's very curious to think of how someone could get an injury in that spot. The only thing I can think of is being stomped on, maybe while someone's wearing a boot, and a big bruise on her inner forearm. Finally, we found a clip of the video footage that was posted to Spencer's Snapchat. We know from Michelle that there were two pictures and one video. We've seen the screen cap of the video, which was Spencer, and it shows the angle from behind him, rowing the skinny boat as he straddles it wearing a tank top and no life vest. Here is the audio of this quick snippet from Snapchat.
Yo, we're out here in the fucking ocean. With us, that is the land. Like, we still have to get to there. Wait, where? Oh, we're almost there. Okay, but you know, Spence fucking sucks. Come on, get us there.
That's the voice of Sophia McKenna. It's the last time we hear her voice. She's narrating as Spencer is rowing. She pans the camera to show the horizon. We see it's pitch black. The water is dark. We see from a very far distance land, as she says. And at the very end, she pans to the other side of Spencer and sees that they're actually quite close to the lighthouse. And you can see that bright light. So they're almost there. And then she sort of says to Spencer, come on, get us there. She sounds happy. She sounds in good spirits. They both seem to be in good spirits. You can kind of hear Spencer talking in the background. You can't really hear what he's saying. She maybe is slurring her speech a little bit. We know that alcohol was involved based on Spencer Mugford's toxicology report. So that's not a surprise. Very interesting to actually hear Sophia's voice. Very haunting in that moment. Thank you for listening to part 3 of our coverage on the disappearance of Sophia McKenna. If you want to stay tuned on our content on this case, please subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. If you want to keep up with True Crime Twins, please follow us on social media. We have fun on TikTok at True Crime Twins, on Twitter at True Crime Twins, Instagram at True Crime Twins Podcast. You can also email us at truecrimetwinspodcast@gmail.com.